Hi everybody, this is Becky Cunningham, otherwise known as Ocelot, RP Gamer's News Director, and I'm here at Eidos Montreal where we've had a preview event for Deus Ex Human Revolution. If you haven't yet checked out our preview that we posted, you should do that first because I'm going to be asking some follow-up questions about the things that I've already written to you about. Alright, so I'm here with Mary DeMarle. From Eidos, and would you mind telling us a little bit about what you do on the Deus Ex team?
Sure. I am the narrative designer and lead writer on the project. So what the lovely title narrative designer means is that it was my job to not only create the story, but kind of work with the team to figure out how to get it fully implemented in. And as lead writer, I worked with a team of about 7 writers, I think, who most of were contract and came on at various points in the project to help us write the phenomenal amount of writing that had to be done for this, both in terms of dialogues and in terms of in-game artifacts like books and newspapers and emails and things like that. So.
Great. So I have some general gameplay questions. As I mentioned in my preview, Deus Ex has 4 gameplay pillars, and I just have one question about each one of those. So in the combat, I know there's a lot of weapons in the game, both lethal and non-lethal. Is there a weapon skill system in the game where you need to skill up the weapons to use them?
In terms of weapon skill, there's not, I mean, we didn't want to go, I know the first Deus Ex had the whole thing that, you know, you had to add your points and you'd be a bad shooter until you did. We've stayed away from that kind of thing. We figure you're there to play and put those experience points into other things. But you can upgrade weapons, certainly, and in doing so you can certainly make the weapons better. So it more becomes down to your own personal skill and then improving that over the game. And then upgrading the weapons with the different things that will make them better, shooter, faster, or whatever.
So if I line up a headshot and it works, I'm going to hit him.
Exactly.
And not because
you don't have enough skill points.
Okay,
exactly.
Great. That's
and for someone like me who sucks at shooting, that's really good.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I go, great. So in the stealth section, I saw a number of the dreaded air ducts in the preview. How much time will a stealth-oriented player be spending in air ducts and how much in other areas?
Well, the fun thing about it, because I like playing stealth and I've been playing stealth a lot recently in it, the air ducts are, certainly there's a bunch of air ducts there. They're fun to use in terms of sometimes they have, they're up in the ceiling and they have vents that allow you to look down and see people and overhear conversations and that, but stealth also depends on cover. So you can choose to ignore those vents entirely and you can use cover to get around from place to place. So you might be in an environment that's a building with several rooms and getting through the main path, you can either do it by using the cover that exists. If it happens to be an office, maybe you'll be going through using desks to get around and watching the patrols. Stealth relies on line of sight and breaking the line of sight. If you do that through an air duct, fine, but if you do that through moving cover to a position, then you can do that as well. So it's a lot of different variety, I think.
Great, thanks. Mm-hmm. The hacking section of the game, we saw a hacking minigame. Mm-hmm. Are all of the hacking experiences sort of in that same minigame? And if so, how was the team thinking about keeping the game interesting throughout the experience?
No, the basics of what you saw is the basics of the hacking throughout. You have, as we explained, you come in at the I.O. port, you have to capture the registry. But they're all different layouts and they're all different. Sometimes they get more difficult because, for example, there are 2 things you have to capture or 3 or whatever. So it does get different every time. I don't think, I personally haven't explored a lot of the hacking yet in the game, but I've heard other people have done it from beginning to end and just keep accelerating their hacking and that it never gets old for them. And I think that's because the system itself is built in such a way that it gets more challenging or less so depending on the particular hack you're doing.
Yeah, it looks like it could get kind of addicting.
Yeah.
Great. And for the social part of the game, you mentioned that there are social augmentations. Mm-hmm. But what kind of social augmentations are available, and what will they do for your social experiences?
Well, I'm not so sure how much I can reveal on that. There are some social augmentations that, one of the aspects, there's many different ways, I think we touched upon that in social, there are different types of conversations you end up having in the game. Some are, you know, the very simple line or two from a character, and some are you get more choice, and then some are those what we call the boss fights, where you actually have to convince a person of something. So we have social augmentations that kind of play into that aspect of trying to understand the psychology of a character better, and understanding better to read what kind of attack they're throwing at you or whatever, what they're more susceptible to themselves, and there's one more aspect of that, but I've forgotten, so, yeah, and I've already probably told you too much.
All right, and my last one on general gameplay, what are the side quests like? You mentioned you can pick up side quests when you're going around mm-hmm. Talking to people in the game areas. Mm-hmm. What sorts of things would they be telling Adam to do?
Well, we, in approaching our side quests, we really wanted to make sure that they were a part of the game experience. We didn't want to have what we call go save my cat kind of side quests, you know. And so we really tried to make them tie in either to the story in a way, I mean, or to shed more light on that universe. So some of the side quests are catered around people that Adam might know mm-hmm. as he discovers them, and then he'll learn more about himself through those side quests unintentionally mm-hmm. and or without knowing that's what he's going to learn. And some of them are with total strangers, but who shed more light on the society, the augmentations that are in that society, the groups that are involved in the society. So all of those are really an attempt to further expand that universe without having to go save cats.
You know, I just did that in Champions Online.
Did you?
I wanted to go and save a cat. And I just have some questions sort of about the design decisions behind the game. A lot of these, especially Western choice and consequence style RPGs, character customization is very popular with the players that do it, not just through the game, but creating a character at the beginning. So what was behind the decision to have an already pre-made character with an existing personality? You can't really choose if he's male or female or mm-hmm. beardy or not beardy. Mm-hmm. What was behind that decision?
Basically, I think we just from the beginning felt that what we wanted to pursue in this game is the idea of playing a fantasy, playing someone, making that character change the way you want him to change. But really, we felt, me personally, I feel that it's always stronger to pursue a strong main character who has a life and an experience. And if we give that up to the player, you lose, from a story perspective, I feel, my personal opinion, that you lose some of the strength of that story. You might recapture that in other ways through your own player experience by bonding with the character that you create. But if we want to tell a really story-driven game, then we felt it was important to start with a character who had a very defined personality, history, etc. But the fun part comes that even though he has the defined history, you're the one taking him through the journey, so you still have the effect on him. Which I think is interesting.
When you're sort of making role-playing decisions in the game, could a player go through with the idea that they want to have a particular kind of Adam, so I want him to be really sarcastic, or I want him to be really charming? Or?
Well, no, not necessarily, but I think someone asked me once this question and said, how is it that, you know, if you're giving a player a choice of dialogue, that you are able to, you know, okay, this is the bad, this is I'm going to be an asshole, and this is I'm going to be a great guy. Mm-hmm. How do you maintain that when you still have that character? And that's the challenge of the writer, I think, to make sure that even if I'm saying that as an asshole, I'm saying it the way Adam Jensen would say it. Mm-hmm. So you do have the role-playing abilities to be more charming or to be more arrogant or to be whatever at various points. And I think the fun part comes in seeing how Adam expresses that mm-hmm. with his personality. So.
Cool. Great. Mm-hmm. How extensively does the player affect the storyline with the choices that they make in the game?
That's an interesting question because the story does change. The story is still, overall the story is always linear, so it always will go down certain paths. But there are elements within the game, defined moments, where your choice will affect the future of, like, one character. Will one character remain in the story or not? Mm-hmm. Will this experience be slightly different? Will this character reappear, etc.? So we have those kind of moments in the game. And I think the big difference in what the player's choices do is they affect the player's story. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, as we showed you in the demo, you can approach a situation and you have an endpoint to get to, but what you do within that context, how you play that particular thing, if you go through guns blazing, if you go stealth and switch halfway over, mm-hmm. you'll get a different experience and a different understanding of the story. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of that in terms of how the player's choices will affect it. It comes down to the fundamentals of the gameplay with those moments in the story that also change depending on how you mm-hmm. handled a certain character, how you did something.
And does the player sort of see the effects of the choices they make throughout the story, or mostly at the end and maybe an epilogue?
No, it's throughout. It's throughout. And one of the big challenges, of course, is if you want to understand the choice, if you want to understand the consequence, you have to understand the choices given. Mm-hmm. And so there are times in which we are trying to make that clear so that you'll recognize, oh, I made that choice and that's led to it. And there are other times when it'll be something that you made a choice and the repercussion hits you later, mm-hmm. and much later sometimes. And you're like, oh, wow, I didn't realize that would be the effect of that choice,
great.
Which is a cool moment. But it's a mix of both, I think.
Great. Well, we've gotten the wrap-up sign, so thank you very much to Mary and to Eidos for this opportunity, and we hope you'll take a look at our main page for the rest of our day's X coverage.
Thank you very much.